You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to give you my analysis as well as predictions as to what's going to happen in terms of the primaries in the Republican Party. I'm not going to really touch upon the big win for Bernie Sanders because Bernie Sanders is not going to get the nomination, although he has won, I think, five or six in a row. I think Hillary Clinton is hearing footsteps, but fortunately for her, the next primary is in New York in less than 2 weeks, and she was the former carpetbagger senator from New York. Remember, she wasn't born there. She spent most of her life either in Illinois or Arkansas, and then suddenly she ran for senator in New York. So she has connections. She has support in New York that makes it difficult, not impossible, but very, very difficult for Sanders to really upset her. Should Hillary Clinton be upset in New York, I think the party's over for her. But what's the possibility of that happen? Really zero, folks. Because she is going to have to pull out a clear victory in New York, and all the stops are going to be pulled out, and you're already seeing a lot of that happening in New York. So Hillary will win New York, and win, I think, significantly. She needs to win, because right now, the momentum is with Bernie Sanders. Now, I think Bernie Sanders is a flake, and would not hold up very, very long in a general election when pointed questions are asked. And he has some of the problems Donald Trump has. Not as bad as Trump doesn't have as bad a problem, but he does have a problem in the sense that he's not doing his homework. That's the recurring theme. Now, I said that many weeks ago, that he needs to prepare. He needs to study some of the key issues, the policy papers. I assume he has briefing books. The question is, does he read the briefing books? That's rather critical, but what's even more important, to digest them and then very concisely and clearly come up with a couple of sentences, three, four, maybe five sentences, that boils all that down. Well, that's what you need to do. And Donald Trump is perfectly capable of doing this. He is a real estate promoter, and he had to sell deals, and that takes certain skills. I know I used to not sell real estate, but I used to sell investments as well as insurance. So I know what it's about. You have to know your product. You have to know when you're running for president of the United States. There are probably a dozen key issues that minimum. There are actually several hundred, but at least the top dozen. You need to be very, very clear as what your position is and how does that compare and contrast with your competition, whether it's Ted Cruz or your Democratic competition. I'm going out on a limb here because I normally don't. I'm not in the prediction business, but I kept listening to people. And again, a lot of this is colored by who you're for. If you ask a Trump person, Trump is going to win the nomination. If a Cruz person, oh, Ted Cruz is going to win the nomination. I look at the numbers and say, fellas, I think both of you are going to be short. Now, I don't know exactly how short you're going to be. So I try to really look ahead to both New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, as well as California. In other words, the states that Donald Trump could do well in. And I think he could get, if you push me for a point estimate, about 1,150 delegates. And looking at doing the same exercise for Cruz, I think he could get to 850. Initially, I thought 950, but the more I looked at the numbers, the states, and the fact that both Donald Trump is making mistakes, so is Ted Cruz. And what they're really doing is going after each another. It started up today, exchanging insults. Trump referring to Ted Cruz as a Trojan horse. I sort of see it, but if anyone's a Trojan horse, Mr. Trump, you are. And you know it. You're a New York Democrat. You were, and that's where... who do you support for mayor of New York several times? Governor of New York? It's Democrats. It wasn't Republicans. I know you supported Reagan, but most of your early career was Democrats, and until really about six, seven years ago, you were supporting Democrats. Now, I understand why. I'm not being critical. If you're in the real estate development arena, you have to deal with various government agencies or entities to get your deals, projects off the ground. So I'm not criticizing you. That's just the nature of the business. And if you're a real estate developer in New York, or for that matter, any other state, you have to deal with the political machines that are in place. And that means making campaign contributions. And you and your father did that. And again, I think that's common sense. That's what you have to do to be successful in business. Now, I don't think that's the way it should be. But that's simply the way it is, especially if you're building housing or apartments for low middle income. Now, it's quite a different case if you're building luxury apartments. I'm against subsidies of any kind. I'm for the government to stay out of people's business. The problem is that's sort of the ideal. The reality is the government, whether you want them or not, is going to stick their nose in your business. And one way to stop that, or at least get them on your side, is to make campaign contributions. So I consider Donald Trump an outsider. And really, he is a Trojan horse, because I think I would characterize him as a centrist Democrat, a little bit left of center, but a centrist Democrat. In the past, I've called him a liberal, yes, but you need to be very careful today, because even in New York, there were a range of candidates for any office, whether it's mayor of the city of New York or governor of New York, and they range from progressive, communist, socialist, liberal, primarily left to center, until you get to a rather in the center position. And what's happened to the Democratic Party, really, since George McGovern got the nomination in 72, the Democratic Party has moved further and further and further to the left. So many people that call themselves Democrats then would not call themselves Democrats today. And that's why I think Donald Trump is attracting a lot of voters that in the past would never vote for the Republican candidate and really would never vote conservative. So he is getting what in the past has been called Reagan Democrats. And that's frankly what the Republican Party needs. And you see it in the numbers. Now, Ted Cruz had a terrific night. And I don't want to, and I need to make, I always make this disclosure up front, because some will say, well, you're for Donald Trump, you're for Ted Cruz. I'm not a Republican. I'm certainly not a Democrat, but I'm not a Republican. I've given up on both parties because they're both big government parties. That's my problem with what I call the two-party tyranny. You don't really have a choice today. Both parties are in your pocket, taking your money, and want to spend it on various government projects. And that means all of the departments and agencies and programs are growing, growing, and growing. And they're beyond the means of the American public to support it with simply tax money. And they're beyond even Treasury securities going into debt. They're now printing money. Or now they supposedly have stopped, but that'll only continue until the next recession depression comes, and then they'll start printing money again. So both parties are out of control when it comes to federal government spending. So I don't really have a candidate. None of these, neither party is my cup of tea anymore. They're both big government parties. And it doesn't matter to me who wins, whether it's Ted Cruz or Donald Trump. Nothing's going to really change in Washington. The bureaucracy will be the same. The House and the Senate more or less will be the same. Yes, some people will retire. Some will be defeated. But usually the incumbents win. So-called incumbent advantage. It usually is somewhere between 90 and 95%. So it doesn't matter whether your favorite candidate, whether it's Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, or Ted Cruz wins. The bureaucracy is still there. K Street with the lobbyists are still there. And so is Congress, because we have only a very limited choice. Now, I'm aware of this, but many people aren't. There are literally dozens of parties, at least two or three dozen parties. Some of them are having conventions. The problem with these parties is they usually win less than 1%. In other words, they're noise. They're a distraction. And I include the Libertarian Party in that. I think they're having their convention in May in Orlando, Florida, and they've had some good candidates in the past, but they never really do very, very well. And the reason why is both parties have made sure it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get on the ballot. And if you try to go that route, just for president, it'll cost you somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 million to as high as $20 million. And you need to have already made that effort. That's just to get on the ballot. That doesn't mean you're going to win, and that's the problem. And Donald Trump is well aware of this. That's why he's running in the Republican Party. I think he really wanted to run the Democratic Party, but the problem was Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton was supposedly going to be the nominee in 2008, and she lost to Barack Obama. And Barack Obama should have lost in 2012, but he won. So Donald Trump had to wait to 2016, saw that Hillary Clinton was going to run, so he made the calculated decision to run in 2016 for the Republican nomination. I think he has been planning this for at least 4 to 8 years. I think he came to the conclusion that running in the Democratic Party just simply wasn't in the cards, and he would have to wait to 2020 or 2024, and by then he's simply too old. He's 69 years old. And it's going to have a birthday, I believe, in June. I'm not sure when he was born, quite frankly. I thought it was in June. I was reading someplace else that was in August. I don't know. But I know he will be 70 this year. So if he gets elected the first time, and I think he's going to get the nomination, and yes, I think he's going to get elected. That's my bottom line prediction. The only thing that could mess it up, frankly, is Donald Trump. I think his supporters are hoping that he would do better, would be better prepared in the debates. And now makes a valid point. I'll be candid. I'm sick of the debates in terms of the primary. But there's another set of debates coming up, probably three, between whoever the Democratic candidate is. And as of today, that's going to be Hillary Clinton. So he's going to have to debate Hillary Clinton. Now, she's not very good, but she is a hard worker and will be prepared. And that's what Donald Trump is going to be up against. So he has to show his supporters that he is prepared. And some people have made the suggestion, and I sort of agree with that, that one thing he could do is make, 4 to 6 speeches, well-prepared, thought-out speeches. Yes, he'll use a teleprompter and lay out his positions. And let me give you a couple of what I think he needs to do. My mind, the big problem is out-of-control spending. So I think he needs to give details, not broad generalities. How are you going to balance the budget? How long it's going to take, and what are you going to do? Are you going to close departments, which I think is a good idea, but I think at least 8 can be cut. Now, I'm not expecting a Democrat or a former Democrat, especially one of the liberal persuasion, that believes in big government, and Donald Trump does. You see, Donald Trump fits in both the Democrat and the Republican Party. Why? Both parties are for big government. So Donald Trump doesn't have that problem. But he has to convince people, what is he going to do different from Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton to get this country moving again? And cutting government spending should be priority number one. Yeah, the issue or concern of the American people are jobs, but why is this economy stagnating and not growing? At the end of the month, we'll have the advance estimate for the first quarter of this year, and it looks like it's going to be under 1%. The question is it going to be 0.5%, or it could even go negative? If it goes negative, that's going to hurt the Democratic Party, because if we have 2 quarters in a row of negative gross domestic product growth, in other words, no growth, that's technically a recession. And that could happen. If it happens in the first and the second and the third quarter, that is going to give a big advantage to the Republican Party, because it demonstrates that the Democratic Party economic policies have been a failure. And they have been. And Donald Trump needs to make that case that we need to get the United States growing again. And that means we need to downsize the size of the federal government. So he needs to make a speech on that. And he needs to be specific. Which departments? How many billions of dollars does that save? How many government bureaucrats are going to have to retire? He needs to be bold. He needs to be specific. I think he would enjoy the exercise. It would scare the hell out of the Washington establishment and bureaucrats. But that's what his supporters are expecting, because they're sick of both political parties lying to them. They want to see, you want to make America great, show me how. And you show people how by saying, okay, I'm going to close this department, this department, this department, this department, and the rest of the departments are going to cut their budget 10%. And then lay out the numbers and show that it works. Score it, in other words. That takes an organization, and that takes experts. Doesn't mean Donald Trump has to do it, but he needs to hire and have people that are smart on this lay this out. I think what's happening is, and it always happens, the candidates tend to, once they feel comfortable with and have confidence in an advisor, tend to go along with the advice. So if you haven't thought about or not familiar with a policy area, in other words, you're not an expert, and most people aren't. I wouldn't expect any real estate developer to really understand the size and the scope of the budget and where the fat is. And there's a lot of fat. There's a lot of waste and abuse. You have to spell it out. You can't just say that. So he needs to give at least one good speech on how he would downsize the federal government, but explain why. The second is he needs to explain economic incentives. How is he going to change the tax code to encourage business formation as well as investment? Now, he does have a tax position. It's seldom, if ever, discussed. All he says is, well, Larry Kudlow, well, I listen to Larry Kudlow on the radio, and about 90% of the time I agree with him. And Larry Kudlow is a broken record. Well, we need to decrease the corporate tax rate. Well, that's not original with Larry Kudlow. You see, Donald Trump's problem, he wasn't very bold. He has a good tax plan, but is it the best? No, because he keeps the income tax. You see, I was looking for the candidate that would abolish all federal taxes and replace it with one tax, a broad-based consumption tax. And I'm going to give a show probably next week on that subject. I mention it for this reason. If we went to something like the fair tax, or my version of it, the fair tax less, we wouldn't have so-called corporate inversions. That's been in the news, where companies that are doing business in the United States change their domicile to a foreign country, usually by acquiring foreign-based companies, really to save taxes. And that's going on, and President Obama wants to stop that. I think both of them are missing the boat. What you want to have is a magnet, strong economic incentives, not penalties, incentives to encourage businesses to come back into the United States. In other words, the United States be the number one country in the entire world to do business in and invest in. And you do that by doing away with income taxes, personal income taxes, corporate income taxes, partnership taxes, alternative minimum tax, capital gains tax, estate taxes, gift taxes. Do away with all the income taxes. Get them off the book. We're going to a different system where when you purchase a new good or service at a store, a consumer good, you will pay a consumption tax. And the consumption tax is 20%. Now, I'm not happy with 20%. And frankly, it should go down over time. But I would limit it to 20%. And by doing away with, there would be no tax on income, none. In other words, your gross paycheck would be your paycheck. There'd be no filling out income tax returns that most people are doing right now. And the way you pay your taxes is when you buy a new good. Let's say you go to the grocery store buy a loaf of bread, that's a dollar loaf of bread. Well, you may not understand this, but let me quickly go through it. That loaf of bread, a dollar loaf of bread, has on average about 21 cents or federal taxes. It's embedded in it. So under a fair tax system, all those federal taxes will be replaced by a tax, the fair tax, which replaces all those taxes. You'll be still paying just $1 for the loaf of bread. Now, it could be any other new consumer item. Not used goods or services, whether houses or car, new, it has to be new. And it's collected. You still pay the $1 for the loaf of bread, but what happens is the retail store, or grocery store in this case, would pay 20 cents of that dollar, would be sent to the federal government, less a very, very small fee, both to the retailer and the state for collect. Gross paycheck is your paycheck because there's no more Social Security taxes, no more payroll taxes for Social Security, Medicare, disability. Now, I've explained this to a lot of people, or a number of people, let's put it that way. They all love it, because I haven't told you the best part. Now, the liberals, progressives, will say, well, that tax isn't fair. They always use the fair word. Donald Trump uses the fair word a lot, too. So do I. I call it the fair tax less. Why is it fair? Well, everyone pays the same rate, 20%. Doesn't matter whether you're poor or rich, you're going to pay 20%. So when you buy a loaf of bread, 20 cents is going to go to the federal government, less that small fee. But what is unique about this? This is why it's some people have described a consumption tax as a sales tax. No, it's not a sales tax. At least the fair tax and the fair tax less, my version of it is not. Both with the fair tax and my version, the fair tax less, you get a prebate, a tax prebate. Now, why? Because the liberals, progressives, they're always screaming, well, a sales tax is regressive. So is the Social Security tax. It's probably the worst tax in terms of being regressive. And I understand their point. So to address that criticism, every adult that's 18 years or older, an American citizen 18 years or older, every month would get a check from the federal government, a tax prebate check deposited into their checking account, or they could have a card, but that's a detail, of $1,000, a total of $12,000 a year. Now, why? That's to pay the tax on the so-called necessities or essentials of life. Now, you still would go to your checkout and they know you got the check, but you're not swiping your card. You're going to get a check that you'll cash, or a card that you can spend the money on. That's that's recognition that you're going to have to pay a 20% tax. So when you go to the checkout counter, you just check out just as normal. None of this welfare nonsense where only certain goods are covered. So the grocery store or retailer, whatever you're spending the money on, is still going to send 20 cents to the government for every dollar you purchase of new goods and services. Now, this is what it works out to. Let's say you spend a total of $60,000 a year, $5,000 a month. $60,000 a year is your spending. In other words, you have a good income, not a great income, but a good income, and that's what you spend every year. Most people will spend less. The majority of people will spend less. More than half the population will pay less. I figured it's about, I'm ballparking here, about 55 to 60% of the American people actually spend less than $60,000 a year. Note, I didn't say everybody, but at least half the population. What that means when you have the tax prebate of $12,000, that's the tax on $60,000. 20% of $60,000 is what? $12,000. That's what the check is for. So when you go check out, they're still going to deduct the tax, but that check is a prebate. It's not a rebate, it's a prebate. You already got the check. The bottom line is this: for people spending $60,000 or less, you're not paying any taxes because you got the prebate. And that's the point. It's fair to everybody. Everybody pays the same rate. Everybody, including the richest, including Donald Trump, would get a prebate. Now, Any time you buy something, you're going to be hit with that 20% tax. Now, if you're making a lot of money and you're spending $100,000, $200,000, $1 million, whatever your lifestyle is, everything you buy that's new is going to be hit with a 20% tax. Here's what, and the reason I'm giving you this brief description is this. This is a game changer, and that's what the American people are looking at. Donald Trump's tax plan, why good compared to the current system, is not the best alternative. Neither is Ted Cruz's so-called flat tax. Ted Cruz said, well, someone asked about the fair tax. Well, it's how did he say it? I'm trying to think of the term. He didn't use the word extreme. He agrees that the fair tax is the way to go, but he doesn't think he could get it through Congress. Well, that's giving up. That's the real fighter. He gives up before he even gets in the ring. I make the point, once we go to a broad-based consumption tax, we're not going to go back to an income tax. Any politician that would try would not get reelected. They'll probably demand his head or recall him. Why? Your gross paycheck will be your paycheck. You're only taxed when you spend your money. Now, why is that important? That encourages people to save their money for whatever reason. For retirement, for starting a new business, for saving for their children's education, college education, to take a trip, encourages savings. Americans have one of the lowest savings rates in the world, and that's a problem. And it's mainly because of our tax system, our income tax system, and our welfare system that makes people dependent on government. You see what a fair tax or fair tax less would do. First of all, it would attract businesses and bring back all the money that U.S. corporations have abroad to the United States. Why? Because there's no longer an income tax. There's no tax on labor, and there's no tax on investment. It encourages business formation. It encourages investment. It encourages people to save. The United States economy would boom. Why don't we have it? Because we have a big government, Democrat and Republican Party, that supports the status quo. They don't want changes. Fundamental change that would make the United States a peaceful and prosperous nation. Now, I need to take it one step further. Let's say Donald Trump and Ted Cruz finally get religion, finally understand why this makes a lot of sense. But one of the reservations and a criticism, well, it won't collect enough money to run the federal government. That'll be the big one. It won't raise enough money to pay all the bills. Well, first of all, the existing system isn't doing that. We're running deficits this year of somewhere between $500 and $600 billion, which tells me the existing income system, tax system, doesn't raise enough revenue. But see, this begs the question, well, then why aren't you cutting spending? You see, what I would make very clear is whatever the fair tax collects, 90% of those revenues will become the budget for next year, period. I'm going to put Washington, D.C., the bureaucrats on a diet. They're bloated. They're fat. They are obese. They're spending money that the American people don't have. They're going in debt, and they're printing money, which is a hidden tax. It's like someone that's addicted to alcohol or drugs. They can't stop. And that's the problem with the federal government. They can't stop. And who pays the bills? We do. So we're going to have an intervention. Whatever is collected in taxes through the fair tax, only 90% can go to pay the expenditures of the federal government. The other 10% will go to pay down the debt. Now, I'm briefly describing this. I have in the past given whole shows on this. I'm going through this because Donald Trump, I already know he's not for the fair tax, and he's not very aggressive in terms of controlling government spending and closing agency. He's simply not. That's why he never was on the top of my list. Rand Paul was, because Rand Paul tried to do that when he was elected senator. Now, he didn't succeed. That's the point. You can't really do this. One senator can't do it. It takes a president and people that agree with him that the problem is out of control government spending, and that is the problem. Undeniable. So Donald Trump needs to give, some would say, major addresses on 4 to 6, I would say, policy areas as to what is the problem and what is Donald Trump's solution. And the same thing goes for Ted Cruz. I am tired of these debates. As far as I'm concerned, I agree with Trump. They're a waste of time between the candidates. There were too many people, and there was too much gotcha journalism going on, and they did make money for the news networks that carried them, but they really weren't that informative when you come right down to it. And that's the problem. What you want at this stage is to make very clear where do you stand? You want a mandate. If you win, you want a mandate to do something. And Donald Trump needs to spell out what he wants to do. The only two things that I see Donald Trump very clear is he wants to build a wall, a beautiful, strong, powerful wall with doors in it, and then deport all the illegal aliens are here, and this is where I have problems. Then we're going to expedite visas so they can come back. Well, if that's what he's going to do, and I don't think he is going to do it. He might build the wall part, but I'm waiting to see him try to deport. And you can. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's doable. But you have to go after the employers. He never says anything about that because I know what's going on. His company, as well as many businesses, especially large businesses, they're employing illegal aliens. But it's very much wink, wink, nod, nod. They know how to play the game, so they look legal, but they're not legal. They have fraudulent documents. The only way you're going to stop the illegal invasion of this country is to go after the employers. The laws are already on the book. You don't need new laws. You just need to prosecute businesses, colleges, cities that are employing these illegals or are trying to get around it by employing agencies or contractors. So they can't take the blame. I always say, I sit on a college campus, and I know there on any given day, there's several dozen illegals working here. And I'm not picking on Richland College or the Dallas County Community College District. I'm just stating a fact. But so are most businesses, even the city is. And part of the game is, well, we've contract that out. That is their responsibility to check. Yeah, right. Some do it off the books. So if Donald Trump is serious, and this is something, he should give a speech on immigration. How is he going to deport the illegal aliens that are here? And the number, Mr. Trump, is somewhere between 30 and 50 million, not 11 million. You see, I'm waiting for Ted Cruz and Donald Trump to be specific. I've heard all their words. I'm not convinced they're up to the job. Convince me. Now, some of the people don't follow this. Oh, if you ask them, well, what's Donald Trump's position on him? Well, he wants to build a big wall with a door in it. And some will know the second. Oh, he wants to deport him. That's all they've heard. And that's all they need to hear for the simple reason that's what they want to hear. And politicians have been doing this for hundreds of years. They tell the people what they want to hear. And that's what Ted Cruz does. And that's what Donald Trump does. I want results. Good intentions. Well-meaning is not enough. I want results. Tell me how you're going to get the results, Mr. Trump and Mr. Cruz. How are you going to get this economy growing at 4, 5, 6%, not at less than 1%, or going into another recession? How? Tell me how. Be specific. I've given you some of my ideas to show you what an address should address. Economic incentives, in other words, taxes, because taxes are a disincentive. Our current income tax is one of the reasons this economy is stagnating. When you combine that with out of control government spending, those are the two areas that need to be addressed. And until they are addressed, this economy is not going to be growing at rates that it should be. Historically, the U.S. economy grows at roughly 3 to 3.5%. Depending on which year you start and end. So over long periods of time, that has been the average growth rate. There have been periods or decades when it's been much higher and periods when it's been much lower. We have been in over a 15-year period when it's much lower. What has happened during that 15 years? We've had out-of-control government spending, massive running up of the debt. It's approaching $20 trillion right now, and that means we've had deficit after deficit after deficit of hundreds, if not thousands, of billions of dollars, where a billion is 1,000 million. And why this is going on, we've had an income tax system that people simply don't understand. It's too complicated, and it really doesn't encourage people to save their money. And combine that with a invasion of the United States over a 15 to 20 year period of roughly 3 to 4 to 5 million per year. So today we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 50 million illegal aliens. All of that illegal aliens cost money for schools, for medical care in the emergency room, and for welfare. Don't tell me, well, if they're illegal, they can't get it. They're getting it, and they're in the schools. I want results. I'm tired of the lies, the misdirection, the deceit of the establishment. That's why the American people are tired with the establishment candidates, whether it's Hillary Clinton in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party establishment candidates. Jeb Bush was supposedly going to be the nominee. I don't think he is. And neither is Chris Christie or the poster boy for the neocons, Marco Rubio, or Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin. So Donald Trump, as well as Ted Cruz, should tell the American people where they stand. If you want a mandate, you have to address their major concerns, and that's jobs, 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 security, 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 and it's the economy. It's the economy, stupid. And if you're so bright, whether you're an attorney or a real estate developer, tell me. I want to be impressed. I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed with any of these candidates. Some are a lot better than others. I understand that. That's why I'm definitely not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican, because both parties are big government parties, and they frankly don't give a damn about the American worker, American citizens. That's why they're in open rebellion in both the Democrat and the Republican Party. Those that stay, most have left. We're approaching 50% in terms of independents. Now, that number bounces around. But I have a theory or a hypothesis that once independents are over 50%, and remember, the party, the majority or plurality, more people are independents today than Democrats or Republicans. That's the secret that neither party wants to really let you in on. You see, I don't have a party. I don't have a candidate to vote for. If Hillary Clinton is elected as a Democrat, she'll destroy the Democratic Party. Because they don't have a clue what to do. Everything they've tried has been in the wrong direction. They're incompetent. I don't care how well-meaning they are, well-intentioned. If you don't know what to do, and what you do is the wrong thing, you make it worse. You don't make it better. And that's the problem with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But the same thing applies to the Republican candidates. And the American people are getting kind of, how should I say, tired of this prolonged primary process? Because by now, unless you've been asleep, you can go online and listen to both Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump's stump speech. Donald Trump is very entertaining, and he's speaking or addressing some of the key concerns, namely illegal immigration, and to a certain extent, the problem with the income tax. He's not very good in telling you how is he going to get us back to a high growth rate situation. That's what we need. And that's what Larry Kudlow would say. You know, see, Larry wants to cut the corporate tax. I say, well, Larry, why stop there? I want to take it to zero. I want to take the personal income tax to zero. I want to take capital gains tax to zero, estate tax to zero, gift tax to zero, and get scrapped this legacy income tax system and replace it with a broad-based consumption tax with a tax prebate. That is a bold plan that will make America great again, and none of the candidates, because they're all big government candidates. Don't be fooled. So where do I see this ending up? Ted Cruz is not going to get the nomination, or let me put it this way. He's not going to get to 1,237. I think he will get in the neighborhood of 850 delegates, plus or minus 75. Let's say he really has a good run and gets 75 more. That's 925. Well, I'm sorry. The Republican rule since 1856, you got to have 50% plus one Today, that means you need to have 1,237. So let's say Ted Cruz does really well and hits 925. Well, sorry, Ted, you can't get the nomination with that. Now, right now, Donald Trump has a lead on Ted Cruz by almost 2 million popular votes, but a lead of over 250 delegates. And once we have the New York primary, his lead will be over 300 delegates. There's no way Ted Cruz is going to catch him. And we have Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York. Those are some of the biggies. Donald Trump is going to do well. Ted Cruz is not going to pull a Wisconsin in those states. I'm sorry. Donald Trump will probably get around 1,150. Let's say he runs the table or does very well. He'll get real close. He'll get 1,225. And if he does that, he will get the nomination. But he still technically is under. Both Ted Cruz and Donald Trump need to win it on the first ballot. Let me say that again. You need to win it on the first ballot, and that means 1,237. And the only way that's going to happen is Ted Cruz and Donald Trump need to make a deal. They need to agree beforehand to have a what I call the Republican unity ticket. I call it RUT. Republican unity ticket, where Donald Trump is at the top of the ticket running for president and Ted Cruz is the vice president candidate. So on the first ballot, whatever, how many delegates Trump gets, how many delegates Cruz gets, and it doesn't matter, you know, let's say Trump does get the number and wins it on the first ballot, fine. If it goes to a second ballot, then the deal comes into play. Actually, the deal should be struck prior to this. Do it prior to the convention. And I told you what the deal is. So if Donald Trump is short on the second ballot, Ted Cruz instructs his delegates to vote for Donald Trump. Most, if not all, will do that. Because Trump will announce, I have selected Ted Cruz as my running mate. If I am nominated for president, I will, my candidate is Ted Cruz, and then when the vice president nominations are up, Trump tells his delegates to vote for Cruz. Now, what's the problem with this? And it's still continuing. Both Cruz and Trump are at it again. They're insulting each other, calling names. Stop it, stop it, stop it. If you're going to win, if you both want to win, first of all, you both can't win. And Ted Cruz needs to realize this. See, Ted Cruz thinks that the establishment is going to put him over the top. They'll put you over the top, but they'll stick knives in you. And that might happen. I'm not ruling that out. But both Trump and Cruz need to be very careful because the establishment, they don't care whether Trump or Cruz wins. Many of them prefer Hillary. Because, for example, if Cruz gets the nomination, the establishment plays games. It's a worthless, worthless nomination. Why? What are the Trump supporters going to do? They're going to stay home. What are conservatives going to do? They'll vote for Cruz. But if they see what the establishment has done to do that, many of them are going to stay home because they don't think Donald Trump was treated fairly. You see, it's in the interest of the two outsiders, namely Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, to stick it to the establishment. Because together they will have over 2,000 delegates. They could care less what the Republican establishment is going to do because they will have cut or struck a deal where Donald Trump will run for president, and if he wins, also a second term, and then at the end of the second term, Donald Trump supports Ted Cruz for two terms. That's the deal that needs to be struck. In other words, a Trump-Cruz ticket in 2016, and then in 2020, Donald Trump can either retire or go for a second term with the understanding in 2024 that Donald Trump and the Republican Party will support Ted Cruz. That way, they both become president, and Ted Cruz gets 8 years of invaluable experience. He's still a young man. Much younger than Donald Trump will be, and they really complement each other. Will this happen? It should happen, but it takes someone with humility and wisdom to do it. if they continue insulting each other. And their supporters don't like it. I don't like it. I think it's a waste of time, counterproductive, and it's not winning or influencing people at all. It's unbecoming. It's not presidential. It's not uniting the country. And let me give just one example. I was a big fan and supporter of Ronald Reagan. To this day, I think his biggest mistake was selecting George Bush as his vice president candidate. Now, why do you think Ronald Reagan did this? He wanted to be president. And he knew if he didn't select George H.W. Bush, he would have the establishment trying to defeat him. So he stopped the establishment from defeating him and went on to be a great president, winning his second term in an even bigger landslide. So you need to take a long-range perspective. You need to say, what is best for the country? How can we make sure, if not guarantee, that that Hillary Clinton or whoever the Democratic candidate is does not win? We need to unite the Republican Party against the Democratic Party. We need to unite the supporters of Trump and Cruz that are not for the establishment. Because if you don't do that, I think Trump will lose or Cruz will lose, whoever gets the presidential nomination. In other words, gentlemen, it is in your interest, and only you can unite the party. What you don't want is Trump supporters staying home or Cruz supporters staying home, or I will add, conservatives staying home. You see, the Republican establishment, they don't have a war on women. They have a war on conservatives. That's why they hate Ted Cruz. This has been going on since 1964 when Barry Goldwater, a conservative and libertarian, got the nomination. And the Rockefeller Republicans, led by Nelson Rockefeller of New York and George Romney from Michigan, two left-to-center liberal Republicans. And what happened? We got Lyndon Baines Johnson, the Vietnam War, and the failed Great Society, and the failed war on poverty. That's what happens if you don't have a united party. The conservatives were not at fault. It's the fact that if you want to win the nomination and the presidency, you must have your supporters, the registered Republicans, fully supporting you, not trying to defeat you. And ever since then, the Republicans in name only, the Rockefeller Republicans, the left-to-center liberal progressive Republicans, which are the Republican establishment, they have become big government. They have become in favor of big government. And the last thing they want is a conservative candidate. And they certainly don't want someone they see or perceive as a Democrat, namely Donald Trump. So the establishment of the Republican Party is against both Trump and Cruz. That's why this deal, and supposedly Donald Trump knows a lot about deals. I think he does. He needs to swallow his pride. So does Ted Cruz. And do the deal, Donald. Do the deal. If you want to win, you got to do the deal with Ted, and Ted has to swallow his pride and run as Donald Trump's vice president candidate with the understanding that should Donald Trump decide not to run in 2020, Trump will support him then, or if Trump wants a second term, then in 2024, he will support you. And in both terms, you will be his vice president. That, in rough outline, is the highlights of what the deal should be. It remains to be seen whether Trump or Cruz have it in them, have the wisdom to do the deal. Trump's always bragging, and it's not bragging if you know how to do it, that he knows how to do deals. And he's a winner and wants to be a winner. Well, Donald, I'm watching. And so are your supporters, and so are Ted Cruz supporters. I'm not the only one suggesting this. But I keep listening to talk radio and listening to Cruz and Trump supporters. And what's happening is they're at each other's throats, as our talk show host on this. I look at the numbers. Together, I think you're the dream team and invincible. Divided, you both lose. Now I'll take a step back. We need a third party. So a divided Republican Party will lead to a third party, as will a Hillary Clinton presidency. You'll get a third party when one or both of the parties fall on their face. So I can sit back and watch and see you destroy the Republican Party and the Democrats destroy the Democratic Party. Who gets hurt? The rich don't get hurt. The donor class don't get hurt. Who gets hurt? The American people. So we need a Republican unity ticket of Trump and Cruz, and I hope we get it. Right now, I'm not very optimistic because I thought after yesterday that maybe both candidates would cool it for a while. And then Donald said that Ted Cruz was a Trojan horse. I think both Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are Trojan horses, so I don't think calling each another Trojan horses is doing any good. And then Cruz said, high and mighty, I'm not going to exchange insults. And all we're going to hear for the next 90 days is lying Ted and insulting Donald, and you're both going to blow it. And guess what? That's exactly what the Republican establishment wants, and that's exactly what the Democratic Party establishment wants. Some of your supporters understand this. I think you know this is true, that you need to have a joint Trump-Cruz ticket. But knowing something doesn't mean you act on it. Because what typically gets in the way are egos. And you both, anyone running for president, has a rather big ego and is very ambitious. And I think both of you have made some mistakes lately, some worse than others. So you got to decide, do you want to be president of the United States? Do you want to be vice president of the United States? If you don't, just continue doing what you're doing, and I'll just watch. And then who wins? Hillary Clinton. She should be in prison, but she'll win. And God forbid if Bernie Sanders beats her in New York, Bernie Sanders wins. Imagine that. That's hard to imagine, and I don't think it's going to happen at all, but it could. Remember Woodrow Wilson? He got the nomination in 1912. He wasn't a front runner. There were several other very popular candidates. I think it was the 52nd ballot. It went on and on and on, and they selected Woodrow Wilson as a compromise. Oh, he was a new face. He was, as far as I'm concerned, he was a disaster as a president. He was a racist. He said he wouldn't take us in the war, and he did. He signed the Federal Reserve Act. He gave us the income tax by signing it. He was a very progressive Democrat, and we're still paying for it. And he was a compromise. Just got the signal that I got to wrap it up. It behooves both Mr. Trump and Mr. Cruz to meet and settle their differences and work out a strategy to defeat the Republican establishment and unify the party. I'm waiting to see whether that happens. Now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.